On this episode of Skeptico.
This is happening. It's been addressed by these very highly respected people. And then they look around and they go, but Mary, if this is true, the implications of this would be so enormous that this would be the most researched topic in the world. And then they look at the research and there's virtually none.
Look, and it's understandable. I think I would be saying the same things. Is, you know, this is the most important issue for mankind, is are we alone? And if we're not, why don't we know about it? And then you have to, unfortunately, for many that struggle with that, you have to look at the truth embargo and have to understand the basis of that truth embargo.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and I don't think I've ever mentioned this before, but you know, when I was a kid, I was a terrible reader. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I had a little dyslexia or something. I don't know. But I hated reading and only did it when I was forced to do it at school. But nonetheless, a lot of those stories that I read and even the few of the books that I read outside of school really stuck with me. And one of those was a short story by Edgar Allan Poe called The Purloined Letter. Remember that one? About the blackmailer who has this letter and is trying to hide it from Edgar Allan Poe's famous detective. And he does so by hiding it in plain sight, along with the other letters on his desk. And I was reminded of that concept of being hidden in plain sight as I was putting together today's show with alien contactee researcher Mary Rodwell. And I was thinking about why it's hard for me to be quite so freewheeling and spontaneous in talking about UFOs, talking about UFOs, in talking about human beings on this planet having contact with beings from another planet. I mean, that is hard to put out there. And I think my own desire to hide some of that is part of the puzzle as to how the whole phenomenon has been hidden in plain sight. You know, as I was putting this together, and this is a synchronicity warning, a mild synchronicity warning, but here goes. I'm putting together the show. I take a little break. The cable TV guy has come recently and has reintroduced me to the joy of flipping through the stations in a DVR world, and me in particular, never watch anything unless it's recorded so I can skip the commercials. I've tried to reintroduce myself to the joy of flipping through the 500 channels with nothing on kind of thing. So I'm flipping through the channels and I run across E.T., Steven Spielberg's classic, The Extraterrestrial. So I start watching. It's right at the end of it. E.T. is saying his final goodbyes, and at the end he gets to Michael, the boy he's been closest to and has formed this incredible bond with. Now, in rewatching this, there are a number of things that are hidden in plain sight. And by the way, if you can stand one more synchronistic digression in this multiply digressed introduction, while at the gym today, I'm watching the crawler and the headline news that comes across, and it's all about the passing of former First Lady Nancy Reagan, wife, of course, of U.S. President Ronald Reagan. And the thing that immediately sprung to mind relative to this is that it has now been confirmed by Steven Spielberg, and it was reported, and you heard it on this show several years ago by UFO researcher Grant Cameron, that Ronald Reagan was given a pre-screening of the movie E.T., and Spielberg was there, and Reagan kind of is so drawn up in the movie that he makes a comment to the group there, something to the effect of, boy, if folks knew how real that really is. So when I say hidden in plain sight, I think there's good reason to believe that Steven Spielberg knew a little something more than maybe your average sci-fi reader when he was putting together this movie. But back to the ending, E.T. is talking to Michael, and he has this heart that you can see right in him. So it's all about heart. It's all about connection. It's all about spirituality. And then they're both in tears. And E.T. raises his finger famously, and it glows, and he says, "I'll always be here." And he points to his head, and again, hidden in plain sight, he's saying, it's all about consciousness. It's about this extended consciousness realm where we can be together. So
How does one reveal that which is hidden in plain sight? Well, maybe the same way that Edgar Allan Poe's Detective Dupont did it in the purloined letter story I was telling you about at the beginning of the show. You look in the obvious places. And that's what I think today's guest, Mary Rodwell, and the group at Free, which, by the way, she mentions in the show, is stacked with academic PhD types, a Harvard physicist, a longtime psychology professor. These folks are well equipped to handle serious academic research, and that's what they've done here. They've compiled the first comprehensive academic quality research survey into alien contact. And the results, although challenging, as the whole topic is challenging, are maybe a first step towards revealing that which has been hidden. I hope you enjoy my interview with Mary Rodwell. Today we welcome back to Skeptico Mary Rodwell. Mary is a professional counselor, hypnotherapist, and one of Australia's best known and definitely most highly respected UFO and alien contactee researchers. Mary is the founder of Australian Close Encounters Resource Network and a founding board member of this very interesting group that we've talked about before on this show, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. Now, hold on, folks. I know all this is really hard for some people. We're not only talking about UFOs, we're jumping the tank and talking all the way about alien encounters. One of the things I want to talk about right at the outset is why we should even talk about this topic, why we should even take it seriously. And then I think that's the perfect segue into this rather remarkable, very comprehensive, academic, serious, scientific research study that these folks at Free have undertaken. So I think those two things fit together. One is, why should we even be taking seriously the topic of alien encounters? And then two, some people who've just stepped up to the table and say, okay, we'll take it seriously and we'll do some of the foundational research. So Mary, with that long-winded introduction, let me first say, welcome back to Skeptico. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Alex, always to talk with you because you actually interest me in the questions that you ask, which I always feel are very in-depth and give me a chance to explain in depth more of why I'm involved in all of this as well.
Well, great. And you know what? Maybe we should start there with a little bit of background, because your background is fascinating in that you were a people helper, a therapist, a counselor who was really drawn into this rather strange, for most people, idea of alien contact, extended consciousness. You were drawn there really by your patients, weren't you?
Well, this is very important too. I mean, my background's nursing midwifery. So I come from a very grounded, you know, position of wanting to support and help anyone who's in either unwell or psychologically struggling with their lives. So yes, I was drawn into this, not because I was a believer, which many of the media always say to me, well, are you a believer? I only came to believe in it because the evidence was absolutely overwhelming. And for me, that's always been the priority. Is there enough to substantiate this as being a reality? And I can tell you from 20 years ago, where I just stepped into this thinking, well, when somebody presents themselves very articulate, very grounded, saying to me, look, it's not just me, it's my whole family, my partner, the children, we're all having these experiences, waking up with marks on our bodies, shaved areas, etc., etc. Well, you know, then it's not fantasy, it's not hallucination, unless the whole family is having this. And so right away, you're drawn into something. It is a phenomena, whether anyone wants to dismiss that or not, it is. And from that, what I discovered, to my amazement, through my research, and has continued to get me down that rabbit hole, is the reality. And the reality is, one, that even the ex-Defence Minister of Canada, the Honourable Paul Hellyer, actually has written a whole chapter in his book, The Light at the End of the Tunnel, on this reality. He knows from his perspective and from his position as the ex-Defence Minister of Canada that this is a reality. And when you get credentials like that, and there's credentials from two presidents of the United States that have seen UFOs, when you get, historically the evidence of UFOs, for example, it's everywhere. And it is only a matter of people looking into it for themselves, to be honest, Alex, for them to realize the abundance of information now out there, from military whistleblowers to hundreds of thousands of people that are saying this is my reality, and their housewives, their children, their policemen, pilots, lawyers, doctors, nurses, social workers, you name it, it doesn't matter, because this covers the whole gamut of cultures, religion, beliefs. You don't have to believe in this, but have an experience. It isn't about belief. It's about somebody having an experience that changes their lives.
Right. But one of the things that I think is difficult for people who are seriously minded, logic-based, which is great to be logic-based, is we want to look to science, and we want to look for research. And there's the big gotcha, I think, because people understand the passion that you feel about that, and just really the common sense approach that you've taken to saying this is happening. It's been addressed by these very highly respected people. We have every reason to believe that it's true. And then they look around and they go, but Mary, if this is true, the implications of this would be so enormous that this would be the most researched topic in the world, bar none. It is the most important topic for our species, so of course it would be the most researched. And then they look at the research, and there's virtually none. How do you address that? Do people bring that up to you, and what's your response to that?
Look, and it's understandable. I think I would be saying the same things. This is the most important issue for mankind, is are we alone? And if we're not, why don't we know about it? And then you have to, unfortunately, for many that struggle with that, you have to look at the truth embargo and have to understand the basis of that truth embargo.
Yeah, in a strange way, it kind of reminds me of the situation with the economic collapse or downturn, whatever you want to say, in 2008, when the banks were deemed too big to fail. So you just have a really crappy bank and you make a bunch of really bad loans, and of course you're going to go out of business. Oh, wait a minute, here's the twist. If you do it on a large enough scale, then it's like, well, we can't possibly turn away from that. Everything would go upside down. And I think the same thing, in a strange way, has happened with the UFO information / disinformation, where the secrecy and the mystery, whatever it is, has just become too big to disclose, too big to chop away at in a way that we normally would with research. So we do wind up in this situation where you just look around and go, wait a minute, no one has examined this at all? A little bit of a sidetrack, and I don't want to digress too far because there's so many important points to talk about with this survey that you've done that does make a step towards trying to understand this from a very big picture. But I had an interesting interview with a gentleman from Ohio State University, Dr. Alexander Wendt, and we talked about a number of different topics, and we didn't even talk about his rather controversial and I think very insightful paper that he wrote on the UFO issue from a political science perspective. And here's a guy, very highly respected academic at a major university, who again is just doing the obvious, emperor has no clothes, and saying, well, wait a minute, I don't have to say whether the UFO phenomena is real or whether it's not real. I can look at it from a political science standpoint, from a world politics standpoint, and say, if it's true, It is the most fundamental security risk for our country and for every other country. So let's set aside whatever you think the evidence is and bump this thing up to the top in terms of priority. And of course, that kind of straightforward logic just falls on deaf ears, apparently. But maybe we've wrestled that to the ground to at least give people a grounding to understand that this strange world we find ourselves in, where no one is doing serious research on this topic, does have some possible root causes for it. And with that, let's talk about what you and the Free Organization, and I understand you weren't exactly the one spearheading it, but I know you were involved in this survey that you've done. Tell us about the survey looking into UFO-related contact experiences.
Well, the important thing about Free and why it was, instigated, and I was one of the co-founders, was exactly that there was nothing obvious out there that was looking at this from the broad perspective that we need to look at it to start with. A lot of the UFO groups have done, surveys on what we call the nuts and bolts of this kind of experience. Everything from how big was the craft, how many people saw it, what camera did you use, was the trace elements, did anything else happen that we could tangibly look at in as terms of evidence. But what they were not doing, and what I, as a therapist, has always focused on first, is how has this affected you? What changes has it made in your life? Has it made any changes and whatever? Because that's what they had to deal with when you've got one belief system that of a 3D scientific world. And, this is what you believe is your reality. And then you wake up one night and the room is filled with blue light and you're seeing a 7 foot tall, mantid, luminescent being standing in front of you. And you're a scientist and you're saying, what the? And the next day, your partner says, did you see that thing in the room last night? Then you've got to start saying, well, am I really crazy? Or is there something going on here? And that is a true scenario of a scientist that I know very well. So then it's, oh, my God, if I'm not crazy, what is this? What's going on? So for me, that's the kind of thing I'm faced with. I've seen UFO pictures and craft moving and every 6 minutes around the globe, there's more pictures of craft and what have you. Everyday people with their iPhones, etc. I don't need to see any more of that. But what I am seeing is more and more people having these experiences from all walks of life, academics, scientists, and saying, where do I go with this? Because I can't even talk about it to my colleagues because they're going to think I'm crazy. So what we've needed to do, and this has come up more, so often, is that some of those academics that are very interested in looking at all of the what we call the paranormal or these kinds of high strangeness. And it is interesting, isn't it, given the fact that so many are experiencing things like this now, that no one has bitten the bullet and said, we need to look at what this is all about. And this is why Free was created, because we were fed up with just looking at the nuts and bolts here. We knew that people were changed, transformed in terms of consciousness, seeing more things, experiencing more things multidimensionally, having out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, for example, shamanic experiences, feeling like they were hybrids or feeling like they were walking, all these unusual terms that people were experiencing, never talking about it openly because of afraid of how it was going to be perceived or being headed towards the nearest psychiatrist. So we said, look, have we got enough individuals that have the expertise to start putting something real, credible, academic and scientific research to look at this from the broadest perspective as possible. And this is what has happened. We've got, more PhDs involved in this than you could shake a stick at. And some of them, two of them are psychology professors of over 40 years. Dr. Klimo, for example, is one of them, and Dr. Leo Sprinkle. They've written themselves many wonderful articles and papers on consciousness, because this is, you know, ultimately this is about human consciousness. We've got scientists such as, you know, we've got Dr. Rudy Shield, who's an astrophysicist. We've got a neuroscientist, Dr. Bob Davis. And what we're doing with many well-known researchers right across the board, such as Kathleen Marden and Rosemary Guiley and many others from other countries as well, that have been looking into the paranormal and consciousness and saying, right, with all your expertise and your work in this field, let's put some surveys together, which are totally anonymous. Nobody has to give their name or anything like that. It's not about their identity. It's about their experience. It's about how they've understood these experiences and what's happened for them. And each one is in great depth with, you know, with the expertise behind it, in open-ended questions that are exploring how they've experienced this. And the first survey was amazing, because what we discovered is when you're listening to a lot of the latest television and fictional things on this, it's all sensationalized or it's all about the fear. What we found was absolutely incredible that, you know, I think it was 60% had out-of-body experiences, about 28% had near-death experiences. You know, there's nearly 70% had very positive, benevolent kinds of experiences. So all the that had been put out about this whole phenomena, our surveys, open-ended as they were, with people saying, for me, this is how it was, we were getting some incredibly startling results. And from that, each survey, the second survey was in more depth, and the third survey, we're going into even more depth. And we've got a fourth survey, too, to go into more of the multidimensional experiences. So what we're doing is we are doing as comprehensively a qualitative and quantitative kind of, if you like, understanding. We're playing the game from a 3D world and saying, right, if this is what you need, this is what we're going to do. And this way, we hope to bridge the gap between those that are still very much entrenched in the 3D model and saying, we're going to play that game. We're going to show you from our research that this is credible, it's real, and it's affecting millions around the planet. And then it's up to you. It's up to whether you want to take that on board.
I like a lot of the things you're saying. I'm not so sure. I understand what you mean when you say playing the game. But there's a flip side of that that I think is important to talk about. And that's that surveys are serious scientific tools. And you obviously know that, because you just alluded to the fact that you guys have muscled up in terms of PhDs and in terms of serious researchers who know how to do this. But particularly for someone in the medical field or the psychology field, when you're approaching a new area that is largely unexplored, a survey like you're talking about is oftentimes the first tool that scientists go to. So one thing I wanted to do is kind of dispel this idea that I think a lot of people have about serious surveys, that they can't be serious, that, you know, you're playing around with questionnaires online that people can just kind of make up answers. Do you want to address that at all?
I think it's extremely important to say that there is a very serious intent here. And the serious intent is that up to date, there really has been no organization that has ever gone into this kind of depth as we're doing with Free. And I understand why it's been the case with ufology, is that they've stuck to a lot more of the, you know, the nuts and bolts side of this. And it's very, very important to give it a tangibility and what have you. What is really important here is that we have to really meet the needs of whatever part of our society may struggle with what we're talking about. And primarily, that is, you know, in terms of mental health, it's traditional psychology and also psychiatry, because we do know, and I've got a whole chapter of a young lady at 14 who told her doctor she was seeing aliens, and the doctor diagnosed her as schizophrenic. And she was put on a cocktail of medications and nearly suicided a few times because she was in such a bad space after them, until she finally herself had actually seen a talk show on someone else describing that they'd had these kinds of encounters. This is such a tip of the iceberg, where so many ultimately are in fear of their sanity, in fear of going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist because of how they may interpret their experiences, because as yet it is not something that is discussed openly in terms of those two very important areas of mental health, if you like. And so for me, And absolutely in terms of, Dr. Klimo and Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who know this very, very well, that the only way we can start to break down the barriers and get this looked at seriously in mainstream is to provide as much information on what we have discovered, even although, still we're only looking at maybe a couple of thousand to start with or whatever. But what we're doing is saying, if there's enough people that are saying this and their patterns of experience are there and similar right across the board, then surely now is time to look at this and to start exploring what this means. And primarily, of course, it is about human consciousness.
Mary, can you give folks a little bit of a sense of the actual methodology in the survey? How many questions are we talking about? You mentioned 2,000 respondents to phase one. I think there's 1,000 respondents to phase two. Who are those people? How were they collected? How do they break down in terms of demographics and all that kind of stuff that you can share?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that we're very close to having our website up and running, which is experiencer.org. And on that, everything that you're asking will be there. So you can look in depth on how it was collected and collated. For many of them, there's been many, as many as 200 questions, for example, on all sorts of areas in the first survey, for example. And really, all we're inviting people to do is to, from their own personal experience, go through them in a way that feels comfortable for them. And again, these are not leading questions. These are saying, how was this for you, or how did you feel about this, or what happened? The other important thing to say about the survey is that we're not looking at anything gained through hypnosis, because there is a lot of, for some, there is a problem once you mention anything gained through hypnotic regression, for example. And that's another area that, I could talk about at another time. But primarily, we're talking about conscious memory. And we're talking about, the major amount of the survey is coming from the English-speaking worlds at the moment, although we are translating. We've got some from Spanish, and we're looking at German, and we're looking, I think, at Russian as well. So we're slowly getting as much language translations as possible, so we can get the demographic as being global rather than just the English-speaking world, for example. So, it's a huge mandate with this, right, Alex, in terms, right, of what we're doing. And, getting the translations for all the surveys, for example, is a huge undertaking on itself. And each one, there is I think nearly over 2,000 for the first one we've had responding so far. There's I think the second one was about 1,400. I'm only giving you loose information here. It's much better if you go and see for yourself on the website, because then you can look at the different questions, you can look how they've been conveyed to anyone filling it in. The most important thing for people to know is there's absolute protection of identity. We're not asking for any identifying features whatsoever. We just need the information. And ultimately, this is who we're trusting, and we have to trust that those that fill in this are wanting to assist in understanding what's going on. And this ultimately is the purpose of it. It's helping us all understand what's going on. Each one is in more depth The third one is going into a great deal more depth where we're doing case histories, for example, and we will have individuals trained in those areas to go into certain specific cases that have a great deal more to offer in terms of understanding their experiences. And you know, the hardest thing, Alex, is that this is so complex. There are so many things that people experience with this in terms of their reality, not only from their out-of-body experiences. Many feel that they're experiencing a shifting in time, time anomalies, for example, which are really hard to get an understanding on. What is it you experience when you're out of body? How is that? How does that feel to you? You know, what is this that you feel that, you know, some people will talk about being on other planets in their past lives, for example. Where do you go with asking questions about that? How do you qualify that or quantify that in a way that can be assessed, for example? Because many people will say, oh, well, I feel I'm from another star system or a particular planet, for example. So we are going where no one has ever gone before. And we're going to do our best with that to address as much of this multidimensional experience as well as the nuts and bolts so that we can at least start the process. I mean, this is years of research, really, down the track, but we're addressing it. At least we're addressing what a lot of the UFO groups were prepared to, for understandable reasons, because we have no resources, you know, no funding. We're doing this because it matters and because everyone involved in it wants to see this looked at seriously by mainstream.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting when we always want to reference our own group, and I can't really say I'm part of the group, but I am in spirit, and I certainly appreciate what you're doing. And I was just referring to when you say none of the other UFO groups. Again, what do you mean UFO groups? This is fundamental to science. Every university across the world has a vested interest in this, it should be a priority on their radar in terms of understanding this. And yet we are sometimes ourselves even want to pigeonhole it down and say, well, it's just for UFO. People are interested in UFOs. No, the implications of this are much, much greater. And I think that it's really brave of you guys to try and swallow it whole, because I think to a certain extent, that's the only way to do it. And that's what's been lacking up to now, you know, as we, okay, well, let's just look at this little area of abduction. And what does that really mean in terms of abduction? And we draw these really hard lines here and we leave out something like you were just alluding to, like an OBE or a near-death experience or a healing. I mean, let's talk, you're a healer and come from that background. The whole psychophysiology thing is something that the survey explores. Do you want to address that at all?
Well, yes, because it's very dear to my heart. With all of this, one of the reasons that so many contact me is because I'm a therapist and I help them through understanding their experience in a way that helps them integrate it in a way, you know, healthily, so they can get on with their lives and whatever. But what has frustrated me since I got involved in all of this and why I struggled with many of the groups, and I know that's because of the focus has been on let's prove the reality from what most people will understand. They haven't spent enough time, in my view, in looking at the changes this makes in individuals after contact. And you don't make those kinds of major shifts in your life unless something profound has happened. And it
give us an example. Give us an example or two of what you mean.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, in terms of a total change in philosophy, in a change in how they understand their reality, their world, they may go into holistic lifestyles, simple lifestyles where they lose complete interest in materialism. Many of them get involved in things like healing, alternative therapies. They will be passionate about trying to understand the true nature of reality. They may be drawn into quantum physics, for example, areas that they will have shown absolutely no interest in prior to their experiences. So they will be looking at things, passionate about understanding the stars and astronomy, for example, whereas they showed no interest prior to that. So these are major changes in their lives. And the fascinating stories that I get of individuals that have had healings on board craft, which have actually changed their lives as well. And I've just done a wonderful case of a lady in Victoria who was 66 years old, had a floating experience. She told me that she'd always been aware that something had been going on, that someone had been visiting her or some beings had been visiting her all her life. Family struggled with it, didn't really want to know. And then she had a serious chronic back injury, degenerative chronic back injury, where she had been on morphine, other serious drugs. Her job, she said, was pain management because she couldn't even walk up the stairs. She had this levitating experience one night where she woke up the next morning and all the batteries in her electronics were dead, which she found really strange. But when she got out of her chair, she could walk around. There was no pain. She couldn't work it out. She suddenly felt really well and couldn't explain it. And what we did was I did a regression with her, and she discovered that she'd been taken on board a craft, that they had done these healing procedures to tell her, now you've got your job to do, your mission. And basically what she'd learnt, and now at 69, she is dialoguing with scientists on everything to do with GMOs, chemtrails, all this. She said, Mary, I'm not a scientist, I'm an ex-teacher. She said, I know nothing about this, but now I do. And what's happening is that she has information, she has awareness, she has, it looks like they've tweaked even her intelligence so that she can dialogue with scientists. And this is, and she's 69 years old now, she thought her life was over. And this is just one incredible case of the changes that happen after these encounters. And it's just not in the media. They don't talk about this. There's books on the healings. I've got so many people that have had amazing transformative changes in their lives, but also healing abilities and being healed.
Yeah, that is remarkable, and it is an underreported aspect. Yeah, it's worth talking about. You've given us a little bit of an idea of the results, but paint us that picture again of, what are some of the big takeaways, headlines that you get from the survey results at this point?
Well, the headlines for me, or should I say, I think the public need to take notice of, is that they have been fed that most of the time any of these encounters are negative and that most people end up terrified. Well, our results are saying the complete reverse of that, that only perhaps about 25% are still traumatized or have traumatic experiences. 70 to 75%, it's positive. They find it loving. They feel themselves connected to these beings. All of this is coming out in our surveys, for example. They're also talking about the different types of beings, for example, that they are seeing or connecting to. And it's not just the little greys or the reptilians or, the standard ones or the odd humanoid. We've got 50% that actually see humanoids, but also, not only small greys, but tall greys, blue beings, light beings, crystalline beings, lion cat beings. There's a whole range of different species that are interacting with humanity at this moment in time. So those are really important for people to realize that it's just not one species here or whatever. There's a whole range. And for them, their interactions in many cases has been illuminating, has been positive, and it has been helpful. And, I work a lot with the children, for example, and what the children are saying, and all of it is conscious memory with children. They don't have hypnosis. This is conscious recall. They talk about what they're learning on the craft. And that's the other thing that I've just mentioned briefly, is how many feel that they've had downloads of incredible information from, quantum physics right through to the origin of the species, to understanding health and our biology from a multidimensional perspective. So the information downloads are really quite incredible. And these are all the things that we're discovering by doing this survey. How many have had these incredible experiences and spent their lives, most of the time, never even talking about it to anyone? And because of the fact that we're giving them this opportunity, it has brought forth this beautiful array of information that we would have never understood by just the odd case that would have fallen in my lap, for example, although I've now worked with over 3,000 individuals globally myself. So I've got I've had a sense of some of these statistics before they were actually confirmed through free. So that's the important thing, is that they're not frightened. But there is those that are very traumatized, and what we haven't spoken about is the covert agenda, which has meant that many individuals have been picked up by covert agencies, and they have done a lot of this research, but you are never going to know about it because this is kept behind closed doors.
Wow, that's a whole other area that we can get into. Fascinating. I'm going to skip past that, though, because I want to return to one other finding I think you mentioned earlier that is of particular interest to me because we've talked about it so much on this show, and that is the idea of an extended consciousness realm or realms, and what might be the connection between the extraterrestrial encounter and that extended consciousness. Do you have your, can you make any speculation about that?
Well, it's a very deep rabbit hole, and I've probably gone pretty far down it. What it comes to me in terms of understanding this from the very big picture is that many of those, in their terms of understanding, have come to this planet at this particular time because there seems to be a program for, if you like, a consciousness shift in humanity. And many of them connect to the different intelligences. For example, I've got an 8-year-old that talked about his real family being the mantid beings because he feels they're his family. And this is a tall mantis, praying mantis type looking being that is very common. Many people see them in different frequencies, for example. And this little boy feels it's family. He's not the only one. So when you get an 8-year-old saying, you know, when I die, that's where I'm going back to, for example. Others will say that the Zetas, the Greys, they're connected to them, for example. And we have them. We also have some that even believe and are quite comfortable with being connected to the reptilian beings, for example, as well. So what is this? And what I'm sensing is that, I mean, I believe absolutely we're hybrids, all of us, and that we've been intelligently designed by a number of species seems to be more and more the pattern that I'm understanding from a DNA level and the information I'm getting about the DNA. And also because this is how it's being articulated by those with experiences saying, I feel very connected to the felines, for example. I feel they're more my family than, and sometimes even humans, for example. So what they're also experiencing is going back to their planets that they say they're connected to. Many of them feel like they go into parallel universes or different timelines, different dimensions, where they may see an aspect of themselves operating on that timeline, for example, or even going on the craft, as this 8-year-old told me, he evaporates into the mantid form occasionally, as he says, you know, although it feels strange, and then comes back into his human form. So if that's the case, and he's not the only one that's explained this to me, although he calls it evaporating, his consciousness evaporating into that form and being in that form for a time, suggests that we, as a soul or spirit, can move containers. Even when we're most of the time inhabiting the human container, we can go into other containers, such as on the craft or in other spaces, out of body, for example, or whatever. So it's challenging us to understand more about, you know, the essence of what is soul.
Yes, yes. And soul is such a loaded word, but I know what you mean, because any any word we choose to stuff in there is going to be loaded. You know, it reminds me, I recently heard an excellent interview with Dr. Rick Strassman, famous for the DMT, the spirit molecule. And I've interviewed him on this show, but I have to say the interview that I heard did a much better job of really exploring that original research he did with DMT intravenously, which is a highly powerful hallucinogen. And the net result was he said that there were these other beings. Some of them are the kind of being, exactly the kind of beings that you're describing and that have been described for hundreds or even thousands of years by people in the shamanic communities around the world, or when as the UFO phenomenon has become more understood here, they've been identified there as well. But the punchline is, okay, where you been? We've been waiting for you here. And I've never been one to jump on board the consciousness shift thing, because I think every culture and every society at any point always thinks they're the special one that is transitioning. So I'm a little leery of that. But sometimes the evidence does seem to point to that there is this development that someone can reach, and then they, boom, make that shift and jump over to that other realm. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. I find, for me, when I say the consciousness shift, the only reason that I've come to that conclusion, and I really want to convey that, you know, although I'm open-minded, you know, that doesn't equate to gullibility. The bottom line for me is if I need enough from both my left analytical mind in my left brain, as well as my sense of knowing and, you know, awareness from my right brain, to be convinced that something has a tangibility in the first place. And the fascinating thing with the shamanic way of waking up, as I call it, because I think there are many different ways that we as may decide as a soul to wake up and smell the roses, as I call it, is through the shamanic route, whether it's through ayahuasca or some other interesting, if you like, which allows that interesting kind of shift to see the matrix, to see the holographic perspective, if you like, which DMT does without question. I had my first clue when I was speaking, doing a debate at Oxford University in the UK, when a student came up to me and he said something very interesting. He said, Mary, he said, I've got a friend, and I thought, yes, right, who took magic mushrooms, and he saw a grey when he took them. Was that genetic memory, or was that, in fact, him seeing a grey? And immediately I responded and said, I suspect he was actually seeing the grey. Because what DMT does do, as we know, is it allows you to see more of the multidimensional nature of reality. And I've met many people that have experienced it, described it to me in terms of the beings that they've interacted with, the understanding of the matrix. And one of them happens to be a scientist who had been struggling with everything to do with his multidimensional experience, you know, seeing orbs flying around, freaked him out. I couldn't even mention the word energy to him because he'd roll his eyes. You know, there's Mary talking about energy again. Until he'd experienced the DMT ayahuasca. And then he came back and he actually could talk about energy. He could honor the fact that he was seeing orbs flying around and strange wispy things and all the rest of it, because that gave him a tangibility in a strange kind of way, because he'd actually seen it for himself. And we are in a reality that seeing's believing. We're still in that. But interestingly, sometimes some need to experience it the shamanic route to get a handle on it or to get some understanding of it. So, you know, I think it's you know, it's just another way that we're choosing as a soul to wake up. And I do think that the fascinating thing, whether or not this consciousness shift is something that we've been waiting for or whatever, the reason that I give it some credibility is that I'm not just hearing it from adults, I'm hearing it from children that are talking about the new earth, and they're 5 years old, you know, 6 or 7 years old, and saying they're come here to help the planet wake up or to help their family wake up. These are the terms they will use, and they may be only 6 or 7 years old. Concepts so profound that you know that these are not something they've seen. They don't watch talk shows. They don't read books on this. And they're coming out with this kind of information. And I give the kids a lot of credit because I feel that they haven't been front-loaded, that they are coming from an integrity that often, you know, with the lack of conditioning perhaps the rest of us have. So for me, that has a great deal of weight.
That's a great point. And I think we all feel similarly when we hear children. There's just a certain innocence and uncorrupted psyche there that we can all identify. You know, let me move on and talk about the last topic I was hoping to address with you. And it's a little bit, it's really not off topic, but it kind of takes away from this new research that you're doing. And that's to talk about this new book by Dr. David Jacobs. You know, the last time you were on Skeptico, we did what I thought was really a terrific series on Skeptico. I really did, because no one has really talked about this. But the landscape of alien abduction research, and that's a loaded term. I know it is alien abduction, and you choose the term experiencer, and I get that. But for simplicity's sake, and because it's so commonly used, let's go with this term alien abduction. And let's fill people in a little bit on the history of this gentleman, Dr. David Jacobs, who we owe a great debt of gratitude to, because along with Bud Hopkins, they were two of the early researchers to even be willing to go and listen to people who were having these experiences and try and put their hands around what was happening. And they've been doing it for, Bud has passed away, but David Jacobs has been doing it for decades now, and he's to be congratulated for that, as you have too, Mary. I mean, chalking up 2,000 consultations with people is pretty amazing. But the big divide in that landscape has always been the hardcore abduction people like Jacobs and Bud Hopkins, who have a very threatening message, and they claim that they're not trying to scare anyone. They're just reporting what they find. And what they're finding is that we're all in a heck of a lot of trouble, because there is this hybridization program. It's a program. It's an intentional effort to change humanity, to overtake the world, is what David Jacobs has said in his latest book. And you can go listen to some of the interviews that he's done. And he did a very nice interview on Mysterious Universe. He did a very nice job of presenting his case. That has always been out there. And that the specter of that horrible potential outcome has been raised again in this latest book and by his research. And the other thing he says in his research that is extremely threatening and kind of flies in the face of what you're saying is, he says, look, talk to any serious researcher in this area. That is, other people who are doing abduction either through hypnotic regression or just doing counseling without the hypnosis part. I'm with you. I'd love to pull that apart sometime. I think it's absolutely silly to suggest the idea that as soon as hypnosis is introduced, then everything has to just be thrown out the window. I mean, that's just such a crazy idea. But we'll just leave it out there for now, because I've wrapped in about 10 concepts that I want you to pull apart. Here's the point. Is David Jacobs right? Do we have something to worry about? Is there another more covert, very sinister agenda going on here with these alien encounters?
I believe he's right in one thing, that the hybrids have come here or are being born here to change things. I think that is definitely true. But let's look at it from a perspective, a historical perspective. We're all hybrids. We all have alterations to our DNA that, from what we hear, the gods have used their own DNA and put it with the primitive man, whether that was Cro-Magnon or that was Neanderthal, to create Homo sapiens sapiens. We have the evidence there. There's enough whistleblowers, genetic whistleblowers, geneticists with whistleblowers that are telling us that. Many of these species are telling us that we have additions to our DNA from them. That includes reptilians and many of the others that are now saying, look, I'm a hybrid or whatever. But they've been doing it all through history. And so
okay,
far...
Okay, but let's interject there. Let's interject there that some of that we can track back to some hard science that we can at least raises those questions, even if it doesn't fill in all the answers and say, hey, you know, there's the answer to that. But at least we can say, gee, we really didn't know why that foreign DNA is there or how that works. Or we've opened up a new understanding of what DNA even means in terms of we don't understand it to be this fixed blueprint of who we are anymore, but more or less a component of that. So I just want to make sure that we're not, I don't think you're trying to say that, you know, we have some hard science in Nature magazine that we can point to that shows that alien hybridization has been going on throughout history, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I will say is that we have 223 genes in our DNA that are a sideways insertion of genetic material, and they're all to do with higher consciousness. Or, you know, this is a fact. They still don't know how that's in our DNA. And I spoke to a wonderful gentleman in his 70s that worked with Dr. Crick, who also said that, you know, that the seeds of life came in a spacecraft, by the way, in his book Life Itself. So, you know, it depends on how much of that you want to take notice of. But this gentleman said to me that those 223 genes are in no other species on this planet. So make of that what you will. But certainly, circumstantially, it is suggesting that we're hybrids anyway. What I think Dr. Jacobs has been looking at is those that identify more to their hybrid nature than they do their human nature. And I have met a number of those. And in fact, also there is a book just out with Barbara Lamb and Miguel Mendoca on Meet the Hybrids, where they've introduced, they interviewed eight different people that related to being a hybrid, whether it was a reptilian-human hybrid or a grey or one other. But what is really I think most of those were those that connected more to the reptilian side of it and feeling very comfortable with it, by the way, having no problem with it. Most of the time it's part of how they understand themselves or whatever. What they understand about why they feel that way and how comfortable they are with it is that there's been this program of upgrading of humanity where we are now getting to a point of open contact. And they're seeing this as developing Homo sapiens to a point where much of the, you know, a number of the population will be in a better place to bridge that gap between ourselves as Homo sapiens to the different species that will have open contact with us. And the more that they feel comfortable with that side of themselves, the more there will be less fear, there will be less paranoia, whatever. So they see that as a bridge. They don't see that as they're coming to take over or anything of the kind. But there is, whether we like it or not, we do know that the covert agencies know about this. And they have certainly done their own program with this. And some of those that they are, and you see, this goes into cloning, this goes into what the military are doing with their understanding of the different genetics of different species, is they're creating their own hybrids. And these ones may not have the same positive agenda as what those that have come through in this book, Meet the Hybrids, and those that I've talked to that say they relate to being a particular, if you like, connected more to maybe the, you know, the reptilians or the greys or the mantids or whatever it is. Most of them are seeing this as us becoming more galactic in our awareness, connecting more to our galactic ancestry, if you like. And this is how they've understood it. And you know, we are a very paranoid species, I think, anyway. But the truth is that what's happening on the planet now is part of the reason why this is accelerating, because we are getting very close, as they're saying, to, if we're not careful, destroying ourselves with the kinds of weaponry that we have. We're still pretty primitive, you know. If someone's got a different color skin, or their eyes are shaped differently, or they don't think the way we do, we get very threatened. Goodness knows what we'll do when we first see our first, hybrid, or if we see, you know, a full-on gray standing in front of us in conscious recall, or, you know, a spacecraft lands. We've got to get to a point of acceptance around that we are not the only intelligent life in the universe. Hallelujah. So they're seeing it as a desensitization of this planet to the fact we're not alone, and that we are being visited and have been visited through millennia with all these different intelligences. So they see it as a bridge, they see themselves as a bridge to that. Now, is it going to change society? For sure. If you're afraid that the status quo is going to change, well, then you're going to see a change. It depends on where you know what you think about the planet as it is now, and what you make of it, and how we're running it, for example. Because all of that will change once the public finally knows and accepts that we're not alone, and we are going to be part of a spacefaring galactic community. And that is going to change our motivations, our perspective, everything we know about ourselves. And so the idea of the hybrids, as I understand it, is, and as they articulate, is that we are learning now to accept that aspect of ourselves, our connection to our ancestor space, you know, our the visitors or the star people that are our ancestors. And we are going to need people that are able to manage that, that diplomatic connection if you like, from every level, by having more awareness and more understanding of their ancestry.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic. And just as you talk about it there, I'm sure people are pulled in a number of different directions, from one hand being very fearful, because there's a lot of scary parts to that, and on the other hand, being very optimistic about this change that would be just, we can't even begin to imagine how fundamental and monumental it would be. But I want to touch on a couple of points, because one, you're pretty open about understanding the darker side, the covert side, and the abuse of power that could come through this kind of shift. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that, and not to just blow by that with some kind of New Age fantasy of everything's going to be wonderful and rosy. On the other hand, and this is something we explored a lot in the series we did with David Jacobs, where I did an interview with him, I did an interview with you, I did an interview with him, I did an interview with you, and we're going round and round about this issue that I think in a way is central here, and that is spirituality, if you will, however we're going to factor that in. And I think, you know, it's like part of the metagame. You know, so here we are, you know, so we're all living our lives and we're worried about the most important thing that's on CNN, whether it's the election in the United States or some world event in Syria. And we think that's the game. And then we hear, for example, this interview with you, and we go, oh my gosh, is there a meta game going on? Is there a much bigger game that kind of makes this day-to-day game seem rather trivial? And what I think is so important about asking the question about spirituality, asking the question about hierarchy of consciousness, if you will, which really means God, but we don't want to say God. What's important about asking that is that's the metagame above the metagame. And we don't even have to know if that's real, per se, to consider how that might factor in. And in the case of Dr. David Jacobs, like we were talking about, how someone's worldview might impact whether they could even conceive of such a game. Because if you know what I mean, and if you listen to those series of interviews, you do know what I mean. And if you didn't listen to those series of interviews, I mean, David Jacobs is a humanist, atheist, materialist kind of guy, basically, you know, so that isn't part of his kind of worldview. But help me, Mary, pull this apart and tell me what you think.
I think it's crucial, Alex, in terms of how you want to perceive this information from your worldview, your belief system. Because if you are looking at it from the perspective that I believe, you know, what I hear, you know, Dr. Jacobs is speaking about, where, you know, he isn't talking about the spiritual aspect of that, then it can appear to be very frightening, because, you know, there's a sense of, well, this could go any way. At the end of the day, game over. But because I work with that, you know, the what I call the subconscious as well as the conscious of those that have experiences, what is fabulous in terms of our research with Free is that 80 to 90% ended up being with a firm belief in the spiritual world, and also pre-birth and post-death survival. So they actually have talked about them having memory before they came here. Even small children have talked about that as a soul, and actually being able to see their parents they were going to incarnate into, for example, and the family. And also saying that they are part of these species, these origins, whether they see themselves as, you know, a Pleiadian or from Arcturus or wherever it is, Orion or whatever. They're coming in with an agreement with their star family to assist in this new contact of for us becoming aware of contact with our extended families, if you like, or ancestors. It changes the way we look at it all, because then some of them will say, in my last lifetime, I was this, or I was a feline being, or I was, you know, a chrysaliming, or I was a, you know, I was a blue being from Arcturus. So then it's not an us and them. It's, well, they're all us. This time I've chosen to be in humanoid form and to be a human, because this is the journey this time. And many of them will say the experiences they've had on this planet have been a part of their agreement, whether or not it's to give genetic material to actually produce that, you know, to be part of the programs for change, no matter how challenging it may be. But when I've ever asked them, particularly in hypnosis, have you on any level consented? 9 times out of 10, they'll say, yes, but it was before I came here. Do you dismiss that?
Right.
Or do you say, well, that's how they resonate. That's how they understand it. Are they wrong? They're just fooling themselves? Or are they actually, or has that an integrity that is saying, from this understanding, this is how it is for me? And they're not, you know, as the 8-year-old little girl said, Mum, we're the aliens.
Right.
And I think, out of the mouths of babes.
Right, right. Awesome. Well, Mary, it's fantastic work. It's unbelievably enormous in the breadth and the depth that we've gotten into. I hope that people can take this download and do something with it. And in particular, I hope they can dig into it more, like you've encouraged them to do, and go to, is it experiencer.org, right?
That's correct.
And what they're also going to want to check out is, I understand that you have a new book of your own that's coming out this year. Is it coming out in 2016?
Yes, I really hope so. I am plugging away at it. I've got about another 4 or 5 chapters to actually complete. But yes, it's called The New Human.
Great. And what's that going to be about? Tell folks a little bit.
The reason that it's actually the accounts from the children. You know, these are children under 10 that have told their parents about their experiences or their origins. It mentions that their recall of past lives, but also being on spacecraft, what they learn on spacecraft, the information that they are learning about what's happening on this planet. Also teenagers that have written to me and told me about their experiences and how they understand themselves from, you know, not just a human perspective, but as a lot of them with their spiritual understanding of why they've come to this planet with a mission to help. So we're talking about those primarily under 20. And what's fascinating for me is the emails, and I've had conversations with these children. Their parents have been very clear. They haven't front-loaded the children with anything. In fact, the children have amazed them with the kinds of complex information that they've come out with. And many of them are, you know, under 10 years old.
Wow, that sounds great. I really look forward to seeing that when it's come out. So, Mary, let's wrap things up. Is there anything we need to add to this? It's been just fantastic having you on, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this important new survey. I hope people check out more of it. Is there anything else we've left off the table here?
Oh, I think that's been a wonderful overview, Alex, and I thank you so much for giving me an opportunity. What I've only given you some brief highlights of the surveys because I think it's far better if they go when the website should be up very shortly. You will get all the detail that you need and more than you probably would never expect in terms of what these surveys are actually showing. And it is quite incredible, and it is really going to change the way individuals see and understand this phenomena from many, many levels.
Great, great, exciting. I have to say a little bit scary, but exciting at the same time stuff. So, Mary, thanks again so much for joining me.
Thanks again to Mary Rodwell for joining me today on Skeptico. If you're a regular listener to Skeptico and you've made it through this episode, I'm really glad that you're still here because I'm anxious to hear how you feel this interview and this topic plays with all the other information we talk about regarding consciousness. I know it's very hard for some people to make that transition and even honestly consider the possibility that such contact, that is, between humans and aliens from another planet, is actually happening. But again, I think the evidence does lead us there, whether we want to go there or not. So I'm particularly interested in hearing from people who aren't usually drawn to investigating UFO sightings and alien contact. And with that, I guess I'd tee up the obvious question. Is there sufficient evidence to accept the fact that alien contact with humans has occurred? Love to hear your thoughts on that. Of course, the place to do it is through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the hundreds and hundreds of non-UFO-related shows about consciousness, near-death experience science, parapsychology, and spirituality. But I say that only kiddingly, because don't shy away from all the other shows we do, including the ones on this very important topic. While you're there, please do connect with me in any way you'd like to, either through the Skeptico forum where you can link up to, leave me a comment, send me an email, Facebook, whatever way you see fit. I love to hear from people. I love connecting and hear your thoughts. The show, how you found us, where you'd like to see the show go, all that kind of stuff is not only welcome, but encouraged, as it's the big payoff for me. Let me tell you, the payoff for me is connecting with you and so many of the great Skeptico listeners that have brought me so much, not only in terms of suggestions for the show and guests and bookings, but really in terms of knowledge and worldview expansion and general growth, if you will. So I love the community that we've created. I love interacting with you, and I love hearing from you. So if you're inclined to do so, please reach out. It doesn't matter if you're listening to a show now and it was on a year ago, you can still send me an email or drop me a Facebook. Always love to hear from you. Well, I have a number of interesting shows coming up. I'm trying to get them out just as fast as I can, and at the same time, keep my wonderfully paced life intact. So bear with me. I have some great stuff coming up. But until next time, take care and bye for now.